Welcome to Get Sleepy, the podcast where we listen, we relax, and we get sleepy. I'm Thomas, and I'm your host. The way this podcast works is as simple as it gets. Just pick an episode, press play, and get yourself comfortable in bed. We'll take a moment to relax, and then I or one of my friends will read you a bedtime story that's designed to gently grasp your attention and guide you to sleep. The more you tune in to get sleepy, the more effective it will become at putting you to sleep. And you can always revisit past episodes on nights when we don't have a new story ready for your ears. So make sure to listen every night on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. We invite you to follow us on social media, where you'll be able to stay up to date on our latest releases and vote on which stories you'd like us to do next. Links to our social media accounts are in the show notes, so it's easy for you to find us when you wake up tomorrow morning. And we're so grateful to see all of you sharing the podcast, telling your friends about it. It really does mean a lot. And tonight I'd like to send a special thanks to Selena Gomez for recommending our show on Instagram. I had a lot of very excited friends that day, and it was lovely for all of us here at Get Sleepy. And we think she'd make for a great bedtime story narrator as well. And as for tonight's story, we'll go back in time to ancient South America, where we'll explore the thriving Wari civilization at Cerro Baul. But first, let's take a moment to unwind. Right now, even more than usual, it's important for all of us to spend some time being mindful and to put our worries on pause for a little while. So just snuggle into your covers, finding whatever position feels most comfortable at the moment. Let your body sink slowly into the bed. You can feel a sense of care and connection here, as your bed cradles you and keeps you safe. Allow each breath to draw out a little longer. Notice the subtle rocking motion as you take in air and release it back out. There's nothing you need to concern yourself with right now. You are safe and peaceful. As you listen to my voice, you may begin to drift off to sleep, whether it's now or a little later during our story. Just know that you can enjoy a relaxing and restorative night's rest as your bed supports and protects you. Meanwhile, let's begin tonight's story. Our journey back in time starts in a familiar place, an old library filled with knowledge and long-forgotten tales. It's the perfect place to go on a sleepy night like this. As you approach the towering stone building, the only sound is the evening song of crickets. you see a set of enormous double doors before you. The finely polished mahogany seems more ancient than time itself. The panels of the doors are covered from top to bottom in carvings of human exploration and endeavours. As you reach out for an aged brass handle, your eyes are drawn to the panel next to it. A carved scene pours out from left to right across the wooden door panel. You see a set of jagged mountains in the foreground. A wide road with low walls on either side runs along the spine of the mountain range. In the distance is a strange mesa, planted on a mountaintop like a mushroom cap. A narrow path winds up the mountain to a small city with rectangular buildings. Surrounding the mesa are several terrace fields etched into the mountainside, like a stairway to heaven. The story continues on the next panel, with people dressed in clothing bearing all sorts of geometric designs. They are making pottery, spinning yarn, weaving cloth, and grinding grain. Warriors stand stoically around the city, keeping watch over its inhabitants. You turn your gaze to the brass handle on the door. The metal is cool to the touch, and with a gentle push, the door swings open, emitting a soft creak. You step through the doorway into the elegant foyer of a seemingly endless library. The floor is checkered with large square tiles of ivory white and jade green. A million specks of light twinkle across the polished surface of the marble floor. High above you, you see a grand crystal chandelier, shining like fresh snow in the sunlight. Across the foyer stands a gilded sign between two spiraling staircases. The pat of your footsteps echoes and fades away as you walk closer to read the sign. You run your fingers over the raised gold letters as you read the writing. Welcome to the Library of Time. Only the most curious souls can find this place. Each and every book here connects to a different time and place. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. You cannot change the past, after all. You can only learn from it. And learn you shall. You turn to the left and walk past the stairs and into the library. Bookshelves made of the same ancient mahogany as the library's double doors stretch out into the distance. You step between two long bookshelves. The shelves are taller than you, but every book is within reach. Your eyes scan over the bindings of dozens of books before one catches your eye. You reach up to take it down. The binding of the book is made up of coarse, twisted yarn, laid out in diagonal rows. You hold the book in one hand while running your other hand over the cover made of thick cloth, decorated in colourful staircase designs. There is an image woven into the fabric at the centre of the cover. It looks like a necklace, with long strands of knotted yarn hanging from it. Below the image is a date, 7/22. With the book in hand, you walk towards a nearby reading nook. There, you find a cozy, pale red chair with pillowed armrests. Next to the chair is a rustic side table made to look like two wooden apple crates stacked on top of one another. Atop the side table is a beautifully crafted ceramic lamp, sculpted into the shape of a sitting jaguar and painted with a maze of geometric shapes. You sit in the chair with the book in your lap. You close your eyes and you feel your body begin to settle down into the soft cushions. You take a deep breath and exhale as you open the book and begin reading. Before the mighty Incan Empire existed, another people ruled over what is now Peru. The Wari thrived in the south-central Andes from about 500 to 1000 CE, during a time known as the Middle Horizon Era. Through trade and conquest, the Wari built one of the largest empires of their time. An extensive road system allowed them to travel quickly over large areas, while mastery of terrace farming allowed them to thrive in places where no human had previously tried to survive. Though there is no conclusive evidence to explain their decline, it is believed that centuries of drought eventually caused the Wari's collapse. You look up from the book for a moment to consider the words you've just read. You close your eyes and begin to imagine the world of the Wari. As you relax deeper into the chair, you take a deep breath and begin to feel yourself slipping backward through the streams of time. You begin to hear a stiff rustling sound as the warmth of the sun grows brighter on your skin. You open your eyes. A great vista lay before you. Clear blue sky and snowy mountain tops stretch out as far as you can see. In the Moquegua Valley, far below, a river rushes through. You look around and find that you are standing on the slope of a magnificent mushroom-shaped mountain. It looks as if a plateau were lifted up and firmly planted on top of the mountain. This is Cerro Baúl. Its name means hill trunk, the sort of trunk you would find hiding a treasure trove. And Cerro Baúl certainly hides many treasures. Here, at the edge of the sky, a garden beyond belief. Maize and potatoes grow atop long curving platforms that follow the contour of the mountainside. These terraces look like huge stairs cut into the mountain. Rather than being dug into the mountain, the terraces are more like gigantic flower pots built onto the slopes. The Wari are masters of this craft. They begin by building a long, level stone wall along the curve of the mountain. Then they fill the space between the wall and the slope with stones, gravel, and sand for drainage. The rest of the space to the top of the wall is filled with soil. This creates a wide, flat area for planting crops. Another wall is built where the terrace meets the slope, and the process is repeated up the mountain, creating the staircase effect. After a crop is harvested, the soil in each terrace can be dug out, fertilized, and replaced for the next crop. The terraces are irrigated by a system of channels dug into the mountain that direct meltwater to the crops. Being on the side of a mountain, an abundance of sunshine falls on the terraces all year round, boosting crop yields. This ingenious design is what allows the Wari to thrive at altitudes far beyond their neighbours and predecessors. You reach out to touch the broad, dark green leaf of a maize stalk. The rough striations on the leaf ripple beneath your fingertips. The breeze shifts and the sound of the wind through the fields echoes in the canyon below. You turn and follow a water channel from the terrace to where it connects to a large canal. Two lines of workers are passing large water jars up and down a mountain path. The canal was carved into the bedrock of the mountain and carries water for 15 miles from the peaks of the Andes to the base of Cerro Baul, an amazing feat of engineering. You watch as men fill the jars with water from the fast-moving canal. The jars pass from person to person up to the mountain top, while the empty jars come back down the same way. You begin walking up the path between the two lines of workers. Full jars of water slosh past you on your left, while empty jars come down on your right. The mountain air is fresh and crisp. You take a deep breath and let it out. It's surprisingly warm despite the high altitude. As you reach the summit of the mountain, you're met with a white city shimmering against the blue sky. It's as though the city sits atop a cloud. The rectangular walls surrounding it are covered in plaster and whitewashed so that they shine with the sunlight. Four guards stand at the entrance to the city. As you approach the gate, they do not seem to notice you. You recall the words written on the sign in the Library of Time. While in the past, you will neither be seen nor heard. You stop to examine the guards. They have square jaws, strong, straight noses, and high cheekbones. They all wear tunics covered in a repeating geometric pattern, a grid of squares. Each square is divided in half diagonally by a jagged line, creating what looks like two sets of stairs, one right side up in blue and one upside down in yellow. You notice, however, that one square panel is different. The panel on the left side of their chest is pink and green instead of blue and yellow. This small difference may be a symbol of rank or authority, or maybe it's simply an artist's signature. Their clothes are, after all, works of art. Each guard has a square shield in one hand, and either a javelin or a poleaxe in the other. The shields are painted with repeated designs of diamonds within squares. Their helmets also bear the same blue and yellow step design. As you take in the scene, you realize how dazzling and confusing the designs would be in motion. It would be hard to tell where one person ended and another began. Though the guards are certainly trained warriors, it seems as though they are more for show than anything. In fact, there is little evidence of warfare among the Wari people. Perhaps it was a facade of military strength that led their neighbors to seek peaceful relations rather than battle. You slip past the guards unnoticed and climb a set of stairs to the wall top to get a better view of the city. A maze of walls, streets and buildings in perfect right angles reveals itself as you ascend. Every building is a rectangle, and some are several stories tall. There is a ziggurat, a pyramid-like temple, and a palace on the far side of the city. The city covers about half of the 500-yard-long Misa, with a few buildings scattered outside of the main walls. It seems that this is where the tradesmen, priests and political elite make their home. You head down the stairs and into the city. Many of the buildings have small entrances and few, if any, windows. In some areas, the plaster has cracked and crumbled from the walls. Inside, you see a simple marvel of engineering. Long rows of adobe bricks are standing on end with small gaps in between. Flat stones are laid above and below each row of standing bricks. This design makes the walls more flexible, allowing them to shift and sway in an earthquake without being destroyed. As you turn a corner, the street widens out in front of a row of buildings. Three men are busy bringing out beautifully sculpted drinking vessels from what appears to be a warehouse. The ceramic cups and decanters are remarkable. You move closer and bend down to examine a blanket covered in ceremonial vases. Many of the vessels are orange or red from the clay used to make them, and painted with black, yellow, brown, grey or white. One flask has a flat circular body, like a canteen with a long neck. Animal designs decorate the sides, complete with eyes, teeth, and claws. One bears a jaguar head on the neck of the vessel, with its arms hanging down on either side, as if the bulb of the flask were its great belly. Another vase is sculpted into the likeness of a man's head, with a spout planted in the top. Overseeing the operation is a man that clearly has some authority. He has on a multicolored tunic with a repeating design of geometric faces. Near the hem of his clothing, one face is turned in the opposite direction from the others and has its colors reversed, similar to the single unique design on the soldiers' tunics. The man holds what looks like a large necklace of dangling strings. You remember that this was the image from the front of the book in the Library of Time. The strings are of various length and colours, and all of them are dotted with knotted patterns. As you watch, you realise that this strange mass of yarn is actually a way of recording information, a sort of written language in thread with knots for words. In fact, the direction the yarn is twisted, the colour of each thread, and the arrangement of knots all tell a story. This woven book is known as a quipu. Many quipus have been lost, as well as the keys to reading them. However, some of their secrets have been unlocked. Certain knots represent numbers, and some existing quipus are records of trade. You watch as the man takes inventory of the pottery vessels. He unties a knot from one thread, then ties the same knot on another thread. In this way, he keeps track of how many of each vessel he has in storage and how many he has taken out to sell. You find a shady spot next to a rectangular pool of water and sit. You close your eyes as you contemplate what you have seen. The terraced farms climbing the mountainside. The stepped patterns on the guards' uniforms. The pyramid temple and the geometric art. The Wari seem like a people fascinated with angles, or perhaps stairs. Their whole world is laid out vertically. Rather than living forward to back or left to right, their lives are up and down, from the mountaintop to the canyon below. You ponder over the quipu. Letters would seem only natural to a people that are so accustomed to making geometric shapes. Yet, they choose to write in thread with knots. As you wonder about these things, gazing into the crystal clear pool of water, you begin to feel yourself slipping through the streams of time once again. You open your eyes to find yourself back in the Library of Time. You are sitting in the same pale red chair where you started, with the book closed in your lap. You run your fingers over the image of the quipu on the cover, feeling its raised edges. After placing the book on the table next to the chair, you reach up to turn off the light of the jaguar-shaped lamp. You close your eyes as you settle down into the cozy chair once more and drift comfortably off to sleep.